Welcome to episode 3 of Rethink with Refash, a podcast where we challenge the norms, spark meaningful conversations, and inspire a new way of thinking about sustainability and conscious consumption. I'm your host, Akanksha Kella Akashi, the founder of Refash, and I'm thrilled to have you join us on this journey of discovery and transformation. Today, we're spotlighting a game changer in sustainable fashion, Gautam Malik, the visionary founder of Jaggery. Gautam is not just creating products, he's reimagining the possibilities of upcycling and innovation to shape a more equitable and sustainable fashion industry. His approach defies convention and dares to ask, how can fashion be a force for good? In this episode, we'll dive into Gautam's inspiring journey, uncover the challenges of building a sustainable fashion brand, and explore the bold ideas driving his mission. This episode is packed with insights that will leave you rethinking what's possible. Welcome, Gautam.
Thank you, Akanksha. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. So I know I did a little introduction for your brand and for you as well, but what is your elevator pitch I'd like to know from you?
Well, from a personal perspective, I think of myself as a social innovator these days, with a background in architecture, film, and design.
Okay. And when someone asks you to talk about what is your brand and, you know, what does Jaggery really do, what is the first thing that you say to the person, or what's your kind of 60-minute pitch to that person?
Well, we have a top-down pitch and we have a bottom-up pitch. So with the top-down, you know, we kind of try and talk to potential stakeholders, you know, from the perspective of partnering with various organizations, big or small, to scale our organization.
Right.
From a bottom up, we talk to the social layer, you know, where we talk to people who are aching to be mainstreamed with financial inclusion, better job opportunities, dignity of labor.
Right.
So in a nutshell, it's the elevator pitch is a one-liner. The median is that bags at the intersection of climate and equity.
I also read on your website that you coined the term bagtivism. Was that something that you guys coined, or was that something that you inspired, to think of? How did that really happen?
Well, one of the key values of ours is to bring about change. And how do we do that is through some level of activism, you know, being involved in a community endeavor or a program that's bigger than oneself, right?
Right.
So, it literally combines the idea of making action through bags. So using bags as a powerful tool to bring about social equality and climate action through our work.
Right.
That's how we kind of came up with coined the term bagtivism.
What was that moment where you saw car seat belts seat belts and you thought that, okay, we're going to change this into a bag? How did that happen?
Well, seatbelts present themselves as a very durable material. So the Eureka moment happened for us while I was driving and stuck in the Delhi traffic. And, you know, I was trying to my t-shirt or shirt, I don't remember, was pretty sticky because of the weather.
Right.
And just was constantly fidgeting at the seatbelt. And invariably from one of those sourcing trips to different parts of the city, and I was like, you know, this really feels like it has the tenacity to kind of lend itself to another life, you know, after. And then sure enough, you know, we did a little bit of research and found out that there was an organization in Switzerland already using seatbelts in their in their value proposition, and including that in their product design ethos and all.
Right.
So it was something that we stumbled upon by chance, but this material has lent itself already in various value chains across the world. So various applications after its first life, you know.
Right.
Lying if I said that I had all the answers, you know, when we started or when we registered the company, that this is how we're going to do and this is how the model is going to evolve in the next 5-6 years.
Right.
It was all happenstance, you know. So as the story evolved and as, you know, the various challenges presented themselves,
right.
A little bit of our journey has been colored by all those small facets, you know. So,
but the intention was to use a material to create, an organization or a brand that was doing social good, or what was the intention at that point in time?
Yeah, so I come from an architectural background, Kanksha, and you know, we were exposed to various theories. Maybe all of them weren't practiced. So, you know, during my education, my master's in fine arts in the US, we were exposed to more praxis-based approaches, right? So approaches that are guided by theory,
right,
but then are informed by production and practice-based decisions.
Right.
So in one of those instances, I stumbled upon a fantastic book by Jane Jacob. And this book dates back to circa 1970. It talks a lot about how cities can become the hubs, new cities of the future. And obviously in the context of American cities, because I was a graduate student in the US, right. But applications of these Jane Jacob principles lend themselves to, you know, circular economy, and more specifically, creative circular economy. And that's what kind of propelled us to, you know, practice this out. You know, what we had kind of internalized as a theory component.
Right.
This was an opportunity for us to take a material that had already led a first life, you know, bring in a social element, and create cities that are export savvy. And Jane Jacobs talks explicitly about how exports can, you know, create better cities and better places, and generate you know, a sense of dignified urban livelihoods.
Wow.
Yeah, and then the imports that you generate, those can then be reinvested into the value chain of the organization. So that's what we've kind of tried to kind of follow all along and stay true to that vision that all these seminal thinkers have had prior to us. So if we look at it, India's edge over the world is our social capital, right?
Right.
There are so many, you know, members of our underserved communities, marginalized communities who are aching to be mainstream.
Yeah.
So that has always guided us. And it so happens that now, you know, we've managed to position ourselves as a sustainable fashion brand. And but I, you know, I'd be completely owning up to the fact that it's a emergent phenomenon, right?
Right.
It wasn't necessarily something as a milestone that we had set out to accomplish.
Right. After you studied, you went on to your, you know, you worked in several different companies. What was that trajectory like when you were working for other people? And you, I also read that you were living abroad for a bit and working else, you know, in another country. What made you decide to come back to India at that point in time?
So after my architecture from Pune University, I ended up in the US for my master's in, you know, interaction design, communication arts. And after I finished that, I picked up a few jobs in the US. One of those jobs really colored my perception about design processes and, you know, really guided me in terms of what should be design documentation and the importance that design documentation holds for us to communicate the work that we're doing to various stakeholders. So in the US, I worked with Time Warner AOL. I was a part of various teams, you know, essentially coming up with user experience and the architecture of their new property. They had just reinvented themselves and went ahead and kind of rebranded themselves. So a lot of properties were coming up specific to various topics, you know, food, music, ebony culture, film. And, you know, so I got an opportunity to kind of architect what that experience will be from a user experience perspective for the followers of Time Warner Properties. And after that, I moved to India in 2010. You know, if you're coming from the US, people automatically open doors for you. So I found it very comfortable to find access to boardrooms and discussing, you know, topics with CXOs. So I picked up a position, a creative, you know, position with Jabong. And Jabong, I was, it was an N-1, so rolling up directly into the founders and, you know, basically using that as a platform to set up Jabong as a cutting-edge user experience in India, based on, you know, design thinking principles of minimalism and letting design, you know, be very transparent and letting the content do most of the talking. So, you know, I'm talking about circa 2010-12, where design guidelines and, you know, identities were not necessarily woven into the user experience architecture. You know, there are various things that kind of shaped the way my journey evolved over the last few years.
Right. And what was that moment where you decided to leave all that and completely, you know, sort of start something by yourself?
Yeah, so this is post, I had already quit my Jabong gig and I was doing freelance projects and consultancy in the user experience design, visual communication, you know, film scripts and all that for various clients. And I remember when the Paris Agreement was signed in 2015, that really like kind of gave me the, you know, the impetus to just launch off on my own. And I thought, and obviously there were some reports that I'd read from the big four companies that were talking about huge sustainability gaps that there existed, and they still do, from the perspective of the global north being a great market for products that are created lovingly handcrafted in the global north, in the global south, in India.
Right.
And India with its very rich crafts legacy and arts legacy, I thought that could also lend itself to industrial aesthetic. You know, India isn't necessarily known for its industrial aesthetic because we have, you know, so much of color and, you know, textures and textiles happening in our country.
Yeah.
So we thought we'll, you know, inspire, take a leaf of inspiration from that, but try and create something that stands on its own and has an avant-garde kind of a vibe and an industrial aesthetic, utilizing materials that have already led a first life to create products that fit into the needs of the emerging audience, you know. And at that time, the audience was also being kind of created, right? So in circa, between circa 2015 and 2018, we did a lot of research. While I was on my freelance and consultancy projects, I got an opportunity to travel across the country to, you know, looking for materials that could lend themselves to, let's say, bags and accessories and fashion, you know, sustainable fashion products. Obviously designed to sell and not as an art project.
Yeah.
We didn't ever want to create something. And I'm not the only founder of the organization. You know, there are two, it's a women-led organization. So we have two female founders as well. And so we work across upstream and downstream activities, you know.
Where did you find the first set of customers, or how did you find the momentum with sales? Was it more like, you know, sort of, did you go the wholesale route, or was it more sort of direct to consumer? Where did you find that momentum?
Yeah, so we tested the waters at a Dastakar outing, you know. So we took our products, we initially started off working a lot with army waste, you know, which is which came waxed, had a certain patina texture to it, but we realized that there was a inherent smell that had, and we couldn't get rid of that. The smell of mildew and fungus and all these things, you know, in spite of trying different less resource intensive processes to get rid of that, we weren't able to. But nonetheless, we took our first batch to Dastakar, and it was a sellout. We took 36 products and we came back with two in hand. So that gave us an early sign that, you know, we may be, you know, onto something interesting, you know.
And
that
what
people
was your first
are,
product? Like, what was the, was it like a laptop bag? Was it a sling bag? What was your first prototype?
Our first prototype was a bag that we still carry, and it happens to be our best seller. It's called the Everyday Bag, 13-inch laptop bag.
Okay.
Our products at that time were lined with 100% silk Indian decommissioned parachutes from MiG-21s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, how did you get your hand on those?
Just one of those, you know, kind of collection drives or, you know, sourcing trips. You know, we stumbled upon almost like a syndicate, right? Where that kind of aggregates a lot of the army waste from various canteens in India. And the guy said, we have this material. So we, you know, kept pestering them. You know, we'd call them and we'd show up in teams or alone and be telling them to look for materials that are, you know, more textile based and less, you know, have less of, you know, their wear and tear visible on the outside.
Right.
That we could then kind of convert into or repurpose into various uses, lining or outside material membranes or trims.
Right.
Yeah. So army canvas and the parachutes were all through various rounds to, you know, different hubs in Delhi and the country where army kind of decommissions their materials.
Was this difficult for you, the sourcing of these materials? Because there is no ecosystem in place in India where, you know, you can kind of just make that phone call or Google and find, okay, who's kind of collecting this material and, you know, let's reach out to that person. How did you sort of figure these are the people who do it?
It was all through trial and error. you know, all just being out there and being open to the idea that you want to expose your vulnerabilities and, you know, talk about an idea even before it's kind of been conceived, you know, in its entirety, right? So we had a nebulous idea that maybe these materials and what those materials are, we didn't know. So every day kind of posed its own challenges. So as and when, so then we structured our thoughts and we're like, okay, now we looked at the truck tarpaulin, the woven truck tarpaulin that's available, the plastic based HDPE that, you know, you if you poke a finger into it, it'll easily poke.
Okay.
And this was inspired by our, you know, travels and, you know, I'd stumbled upon a Swiss-German brand that was working with truck tarpaulins in Zurich.
Okay.
And obviously, we didn't have access to those kind of funky truck tarpaulins that came inherited with typography and had a certain durability that could easily, you know, port itself into new usage, right, in its second life.
Yeah.
So then, you know, it was always about looking at it from an external membrane perspective. And then later on, we realized that in our doing so, in discovering new materials for our products and our value chains, we are also, you know, kind of, we weren't necessarily looking at the social dynamics, the social angle of the people behind the scenes, right? So, you know, like on a sourcing trip to Mayapuri, which is one of the areas where we initially sourced our seat belts from, we realized that, you know, the guys who were actually disassembling the seat belts from old scrap cars were invisible forces, right? And nobody was acknowledging their presence. So we started off, and maybe because it comes from my filmmaking background, the fact that, you know, I'm a kind of a compulsive resident documentarian, I like to document everything that I do. I took some pictures of that guy, and, you know, he's talking to some friends in the US, and they're like, this is it, you know, like, you should totally take this and run with it. Over and above the aesthetic and, you know, the avant-garde kind of products that we were able to create, the social impact of our products was something that kind of dawned on us through these sourcing trips, you know, that why don't we make this visible, right? The force that's actually gathering all this waste for us.
And do you feel like the customers actually engaged with that story and, you know, kind of rewarded you for being transparent with the entire process?
100%. I think this is post-COVID, BC not as much. BC, it kind of like before COVID, it felt more like a kind of like a good to have kind of a, you know, value or whatever, social impact and inclusivity and, you know, credit sharing and transparency.
Right.
But post-COVID, when, you know, things became a bit more urgent about climate action, I think that's when, you know, a lot of people started really, I started feeling more pats on the back at that time, you know, like circa 2021, 22-ish, that, you know, oh, this is something really cool. So story, impact story cards accompanying products was not necessarily something that people were used to, you know, there would be tags and, but giving credit to the actual maker and having them sign off on these cards then became kind of like a very interesting cultural trope for us to carry into all our products. So initially we started off with story of our chief artisan, Mr. Shahid. I'm happy to take his name. He's a, you know, so if I'm the brains, you know, he's the hands of the brand, right? Or the organization. We don't look at ourselves as a brand because there's so many other things that, you know, we want to do and we are doing that kind of make it more than a brand as such. You know, we want to think of ourselves as a movement that brings about some measure of change, you
I
know,
love that.
And spark joy at the end of it, you know, like sparking joy, bringing change and enjoying life and enjoying, you know, the bringing to life of these products.
How do you do this all? Like, how are you also sort of, you know, doing sort of promoting your products, looking at marketing, looking at sort of business development, looking at, say, designing? As an entrepreneur, don't you feel like that's really daunting? And how do you take care of your mental health through this entire journey?
Oh, that's a really tough one. I haven't really necessarily thought about that in its entirety, but I think it comes from one's own internal wiring, right? How you're wired as a person and how much sleep do you need? So obviously it's come at the sacrifice of shut eye. You know, I'm known to get by on 3 to 4 hours of sleep every day. And then every 5 to 6 days that kind of accumulates into a lot of pressure, and then I'm completely you know, dead to the world for 18 hours.
Yeah.
So, but other than that, I think it's self-motivated. You know, it's a creative void, and that creative void can have many different aspects in which it kind of fills your, you know, your being or how you conduct yourself. So a lot of different elements coming together, I'd say, Akanksha, that that make it possible for me to kind of operate on different levels, you know. So we do top-down, you know, and bottom-up as well, you know. So networking, interacting with thought leaders across the globe, and still working in the grassroots. So I've always thought of myself again as a bridge between the ivory tower and the trenches.
So you obviously started Jaggery in 2018. What were the early years like in terms of, you know, sort of, were you bootstrapped, or were you able to kind of get funding quite early on? What was that journey like?
Yeah, so interestingly, Akanksha, we've always been a bootstrapped, revenue-funded organization, and we've always focused on B2B sales as opposed to creating, like I mentioned, you know, we've never thought of ourselves as a brand, but, you know, obviously we are a brand and we are cognizant of that, but B2B sales, working with the corporates, creating an urgency about sustainability, circular products coming from India, that are able to hold their own against the best of the West from a fit and finish and, you know, materiality perspective, adding a circularity dimension to it.
Yeah.
So these elements have really charged the decision-making process for us. And, you know, this has kind of helped us understand that, you know, you can open and you need to open various revenue streams. So I also work as a sustainability consultant with the various organizations, NGOs, corporates, government.
Okay.
And so it can't just be on the merit of selling really cool avant-garde bags, you know, because the community that really that likes them is growing now. But, you know, when we you know, officially launched ourselves on the 28th of June 2018, that wasn't necessarily the case. And immediately after that, we were faced with COVID-19, right? So that, you know, really, you know, threw a spanner, right, in the works for us.
But were your products available online at that point in time?
Yeah, we've always had a online first kind of a strategy.
And did you see a spike through COVID?
Through COVID? No, we almost folded in COVID, you know, so it was really bad for us. We had a really tough and a harrowing experience in COVID, and thanks to one of our partners stateside, we were able to sustain ourselves. And, you know, so from, you know, sales perspective, various channels, you know, we've been focusing on D2C, and our mandate to ourselves has always been that, you know, we are going to be unmarketed brand. We are not going to spend a single marketing dollar and fill up the pockets of the billionaires.
Yeah.
But we may have to bite the bullet soon, you know. But a lot of that depends on the disposable income that one has, the resources, access to resources. So it's a bullet we may have to bite in the future. But as of now, we are organic, completely grown.
That's amazing.
You know, on the merit of the product, and a lot of you know. Talking to people, constantly telling them about our work, and taking no as an answer has become just my middle name, right? And along with taking, you know, no as an answer, then, you know, there's also perseverance, right?
Yeah.
You have to kind of believe in what you're doing and have a long-term vision. So, for instance, you know, when we had started, we had our vision was to create jobs for a million people across the globe, not just in India. And we always believed that our model has the potential to be applied by various industries.
Right.
You know, automobile, air, you know, aviation, shipping, all these industries, you know, generate tons of waste, textile, fashion, you know, so in fashion, it just so happened that bags and accessories are always positioned within the purview, or looked at it, you know, looked at from the holistic lens of being a part of the fashion ensemble, right?
Yeah.
So we've had access to various communities, you know, fashion, one of the most inclusive communities across the globe, has been very receptive to our work, and film community, designers, musicians, underground. You know, musicians who are kind of trying to defy the linear model and come up with, you know, different enclaves and temporary autonomous zones, as Hakim Bey, a theorist, talks about creating these zones, you know, where you can just detach yourself from your reality and create a temporal kind of ephemeral, a place for yourself. So place making, not necessarily in the physical sense, but in the ephemeral lived, something that stays with you from a memory perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
So how involved are you in the design process?
I'm totally involved in the design process. I'm a DIY kind of a roll up the sleeves kind of a designer, and always like to be a part of the initial kind of discovery phases of the design. Let's say we are coming up with a new silhouette based on market research that this product has a high demand these days. Completely, pen and ink kind of a...
Is that where you feel like you're most yourself? And is that most fulfilling?
Yeah, absolutely. As a creative practitioner, the fact that you're able to create something that didn't necessarily exist before you put it on paper is by far the most rewarding experience. And then, the creation process, when we see the kind of spark in the maker's eyes, and the fact that we've been blessed to have a team that takes up creation as a challenge, so I've heard this a million times at Jaggery that okay, aap design laiye, hum banane ki koshish karenge.
No.
So never had no as an answer from the maker community.
You did mention to me in one of our conversations that you want Jaggery to be material agnostic. What does that mean to you, and why is that so important?
So one of our endeavors or wishes is to be thought of as a circular design think tank in India that caters to a global need for products to be created from India for the West, for the world. And it could be from any sector, any industry. Let's say you're a owner of a cinema and you want to refurbish your materials. So what happens to the materials that are currently being used?
Yeah.
So we immediately, when any kind of refurbishment or repurposing comes to mind, it would be wonderful to be thought of as an organization that has an answer or a possible solution for you. So for instance, Vistara recently folded and Air India picked up their fleet. It would be wonderful for Vistara materials to be converted into products that, could lend themselves to fashion, avant-garde or not, bags, accessories, home decor. And those could then be, promoted within Air India as upcycled products that they use for gifting, for their gifting needs. Because sure enough, every organization in the world, the way they kind of approach clients is through gifts, right? Yeah. So conscious gifting is an area that is going to get a lot of importance in the next 2-3 years.
So while I was going through your website and the timeline that you have very nicely created on the website, I saw that you've collaborated with a lot of brands over the years as well. Why is that something that's been important to you? And also, what was the most sort of impactful collaboration? Where did you see yourself kind of pivot more from? What's your take on collaboration over competition?
So we've always had a left of center kind of grounding, in how we conduct ourselves. And I grew up in a almost like a communist kind of a setup. My grandfather, maternal side, was a hardcore communist, right, Marxist, and he would inform and have discussions with various politicians who would visit our place so that in one sense colored my perception. The whole idea, I'm not saying we're a socialist organization, we're a social enterprise, that's a hybrid model, private limited and NGO, but the idea that our linear system, the way we've evolved as a species, as as business practitioners, as a as a community of makers, we've always looked at the other person from a competitive lens, right? Yeah. Maybe because it's a very Indian thing, population maybe adds a little bit to it. We grew up thinking there'll be, a lot of competition for any one job that you're out there to seek, 100 people ready to take your job. So you better put the best foot forward and show up every day.
Even early on when we're in school, we're always like, you know, it's always like, okay, that kid's gotten these many marks and as against, you know, you need to do better.
I mean, I don't want to sound too heavy, but a lot of it boils down to our education system, right? You know, our system of cramming stuff, and this is global phenomena. If you look at the SATs and A1s and A-levels and all of that, it's all based on the, you know, cramification of knowledge, right? As opposed to experiential knowledge. And so, it's not that, you know, we always wanted to be the kind of the conduit or the supporting tier that also brings up competition, right? If somebody wants to start a bags and accessories brand with, you know, recycled materials and they reach out to us, we are known to be the people who would be like giving them the insights and sharing wholeheartedly our journey, our process, as opposed to concealing a lot of that, which has been the norm, right? So I'm not saying this is a circular model of inspiring people or, you know, even inspiration as such has such a, you know, twisted meaning, right? So we are not trying to inspire anybody. We are just trying to do our job diligently and show up at the job every day to the best of our potential. That's what we do. So one of our recent collaborations, I must highlight that, in fact, two of them have been very impactful for us in creating awareness in the ecosystem and within the stakeholders. One has been our partnership with the Good Felt. It's an NVU-backed organization that creates felt out of recycled post-consumer waste.
Yeah.
And it brings together different stakeholders. So there's a collection piece, there's a recycling component, and then there's an upcycling circular product manufacturing component that we bring to the table. And then most recent collaboration with Sahas Zero Waste to bring re-denim, the art of post-consumer denim, upcycling post-consumer denim. That's also been very impactful for us, where we've been able to mobilize collection drives at RWAs, bring that collected denim to the textile recovery facility, from there bring it to Jaggery and give it our design out of waste spin, and eventually create products that fit into corporate gifting or even personal gifting needs.
Right.
So I thought I'll mention these two impactful collaborations on your platform.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that I'd also want to know what of sort of this lifestyle has kind of trickled into your personal, you know, like personal life or the way that you lead your, you know, your sort of day, and what are the switches that you have been able to kind of make, or you know, how are you sort of making those switches in your life?
Well, there's one thing that we try and internalize, and I pass this on to a lot of interns and designers that come to, you know, work with us, is that always think of, in the conundrum and chaos of everyday life, be guided by less is more, right? Mm. So always take that as a principle that, you know, let's say if you're styling yourself, it's the outfit of the day, it you know, kind of extends itself to that, and also, you know, your purchasing habits, right? So if I'm somebody that's talking about sustainability and circular economy, there I practice a lot of that. So a lot of my, old kind of, materials that I've discarded from my personal life, I try and extend their life as much as possible. And if it's already like, fulfilled its purpose, in my opinion, then it will invariably kind of become a part of our value chain and, you know, be converted into, let's say there was a corduroy jacket that I grew up wearing and I no longer be able to fit into that. So that sure enough became a bag, and that's a bag that sits in my cupboard as a memory, as a kind of a souvenir of, you know, the good and happy moments that I had with that jacket. And so just a small kernel of a thought. So
the last thing that I want to know is that if there was one switch that you want people who are watching this to make in their life, I feel like the first bit that you said, less is more, is something that really resonated with me. But if there was one last thought that you want to leave the audience with, what would that be?
I would say solidarity. You know, and the wherewithal to kind of connect with people from a perspective of creating more communal harmony. You know, so just at a philosophical kind of a level,
absolutely,
I'd love to leave that as my last message on this platform.
Great. I love that. The last thing is that we have a little word association game. I have a couple of words for you. And whatever is the first word, thought, or anything that comes to your mind, you can kind of tell us that. Should we start?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. So the first word is hope.
Gratitude.
Linear.
Circular.
Future.
Now.
Innovation.
Must.
Impact.
Dual.
Okay. Maybe we can come back to that. Intention.
Well-intentioned. I don't know if that qualifies as an answer, but...
Okay. Economy.
Local. Glocal. I should change that. And
glocal.
Glocal.
Yes. Yeah. Responsibility, the last one.
Mandate.
Why was impact dual?
That's because the opportunity exists for us from both a product and a social perspective to create impact, use circular materials, upcycle them, and mobilize bottom of the pyramid, marginalized communities, create dignified jobs for them. And so from that perspective, I feel that this is an opportunity that everybody should be kind of just grasping, right? Because any product that you're able to create in India has an invisible layer. So, transparently sharing the maker stories, like for instance, we do with our Humans of Jaggery initiative. Should be Humans of Refash, should become Humans of Google, Humans of Facebook or whatever.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
I love that. I feel like we can keep going on and on because there's so many different, sort of layers to this as well. But this has been such an insightful conversation. I've had a lot of fun. I don't know
Same
about
here.
You, but it's been...
Yeah, I didn't feel like I was talking to somebody for the first time about these kind of different facets of my life and the organization's journey. So thank you so much for making it so comfortable for me.
Great.
It really
I'm
means
so
a lot.
Glad to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That's a wrap for today's episode. We hope this discussion inspired you to rethink your role in shaping the future of fashion. Remember, change starts with us, and it's time to make choices that matter. Until next time, keep rethinking and subscribe so you don't miss out on the next discussion.